From VOA, Press Conference USA, here is your host, Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Press Conference USA on the Voice of America. Joining me on the program is Current Affairs Assistant Producer Ian Kelly. Our special guest on this edition of the program is Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a Republican from the state of South Carolina. She is serving her first term in the House of Representatives, making her the first ever Republican woman from South Carolina to be elected to Congress. You may recall that we had the privilege of interviewing California Democrat Karen Bass about 1 month ago to discuss U.S. President Joe Biden's agenda. So we are delighted to bring a Republican perspective on President Biden's 100 days in office following his first address to a joint session of Congress. According to her website, Nancy Mace serves on the House Oversight and Reform Committee, the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, and the House Veterans Affairs Committee. Prior to serving South Carolina's 1st District, Representative Mace graduated with honors from the Citadel, the Military College of South Carolina, where she was the school's first female to graduate from its Corps of Cadets in 1999. Since then, she has been involved heavily in the integration of women into military institutions, and she authored her own book entitled In the Company of Men, A Woman at the Citadel. Congresswoman Mace received a master's degree in journalism and mass communication from the University of Georgia, and she later founded her own company, the Mace Group, a public relations and marketing firm. And Congresswoman Mace joins us via Microsoft Teams. Congresswoman, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on today.
I want to start with President Biden's address to a joint session of Congress. How did you watch it?
I watched it from home on my couch drinking skinny margaritas. This was a speech that was scheduled when we were not in session in D.C. It was during an off week when we're in our home districts doing the work of the people. One of my greatest disappointments when we're trying to unify the country and show leadership, it was an invitation-only event.
I see. Well, nonetheless, we'd like to get your reaction. Do you think the president was effective, unifying in tone and substance? What was your reaction?
Well, we've heard a lot about unifying. We've heard it from President Biden since the day he was sworn in. It's something that's desperately needed in our country. But unfortunately, the decisions of the administration, following in the footsteps of Nancy Pelosi and AOC, it hasn't been a unifying time. I mean, we still have violence in the streets. We have a country that's divided. And the November election was not a referendum on socialism. And what we're seeing now in the first 100 days is a sharp left turn in that direction. And even this week, Democrat Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez praised President Biden for his socialist agenda, for all the progressive accomplishments of his administration in the first 100 days. That's really all you need to know. And we saw that on display this week in his address to the nation. And in a place, especially where in the United States, Congress is the first place where we have herd immunity, most people have been vaccinated. And to see the lack of leadership during COVID-19, during the pandemic, to see the kinds of policies that he's presenting, following in the footsteps of Congressman Ocasio-Cortez, who's a socialist, and Nancy Pelosi, who's backing her up, seeing the amount of money that they want to spend of the American people, we're talking about $7 to $10 trillion. And you can't spend that kind of cash without the greatest tax hike in American history to pay for it. And he's not unifying. He's not bringing people together. And unfortunately, this is just par for the course in the first 100 days. It's very disappointing.
Congresswoman Mace, I'm sure President Biden would take issue with your characterizing him as a socialist. He sees himself as quite a centrist. Nonetheless, he is being very ambitious, no question, with regard to a number of initiatives, which we'll get to, such as his infrastructure package. But what about the COVID pandemic? Do you not give him some credit for having handled it pretty well since he came in? The vaccination campaigns are up and running. The economy is starting to reopen schools and businesses.
Well, he's behind the times, actually. Operation Warp Speed started under the Trump administration, took a vaccination idea to market in 10 months versus 10 years. The ability for us to get vaccinations in arms was started under the Trump administration. That's an important thing to recognize. This was remarkable. It had never been done before. I recently got vaccinated, and we can attribute that to Operation Warp Speed. The rollout of the vaccinations has been good. That is something that we can laud over the first couple of months of his administration. But equally, we have to recognize the achievements of Republicans and Democrats on that issue, and to ignore it or to take credit for it is disingenuous. And so right now, too, the COVID-19 package. So last year, the federal government spent about $3.5 trillion on COVID relief. This year alone, in the first 100 days, we spent another $1.9 trillion going out the door for COVID relief. One of the things that I hear every single day from those in my district across the state and across the country is that the federal government is now incentivizing unemployment. We have many, many businesses that are trying to get their employees back to work. Many of those employees would rather stay home and take a paycheck from the federal government rather than go back to work. And so a state like South Carolina, where we're open, we are fully open for business, people are vaccinated, kids are back in schools, we're way ahead of the curve. And we need people to get back to work. Businesses need that in order to grow our economy. Our unemployment rate's hovering just over 4%. The only reason it's not lower is because we have incentivized unemployment.
Congresswoman Mace, I have heard that argument before, and that could be a problem in the coming weeks and months. We shall see with respect to some of the relief money, in a sense, incentivizing unemployment and deterring people from taking jobs, which are very important. But let's move on to this infrastructure package that President Biden would like to get through the Congress. You serve on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee. Do you agree with President Biden's more expansive definition of infrastructure, which includes not just repairing bridges, roads, airports, and railways, but also the part that seeks to expand access to education, reduce the cost of childcare, and support women in the workforce?
Well, I'm a single working mom, and I can tell you over the last year, this has been the hardest, toughest year of my life. I know that is that way for single moms and dads, and even families, married families with full-time working parents. This has been an extremely challenging time. And I want to see women back in the workforce. The worst thing that could have possibly happened during COVID-19 is we forced our kids out of school, which was school is a safe learning environment with health and safety precautions in place. We forced millions of women out of work because they decided to quit their jobs and stay home and help educate their children. And this is hugely problematic. So it's our policy that actually wiped out women in the workforce during the COVID-19 pandemic. And we've got to be able to recognize that. We have to recognize that one of the reasons our economy was so strong previous to COVID-19, and one of the reasons where many red states are so strong right now, is because prior to COVID-19, we were really successful on the backs of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. You didn't need the federal government to mandate a minimum wage of $15 an hour in a strong economy. The market demanded it. And it actually was even higher than that in some places, like in my district. If you work at a fast food fresh out previous to COVID-19, you already had a $15 minimum wage and were about to get it raised to $20. And so we need to ensure that we don't harm businesses, and that coming out of the pandemic, they have the money and the resources to invest in their employees, invest in jobs, invest in better wages. I can't think of a better time right now to get a job as an American. You hear of stories of folks who are giving thousands of dollars of signing bonuses. You heard McDonald's the other day paying people $50 in cash just to show up for an interview. Now is the time to negotiate a great opportunity, greater prosperity, greater wages for yourself as a worker, because companies and businesses, large and small, are desperate to get people back to work. It's a great time to find work right now. We want to incentivize that, not disincentivize it.
Congresswoman Mace, I think some Democrats and maybe others might quibble with your characterization of the 2017 tax cut, which was supposed to trickle down, but it didn't do so as much as it claimed to do. President Biden did say that it even added $2 trillion to the deficit. But that said,
But unemployment was at the lowest it's been in 60 to 80 years. And it was for women, for minorities, for Asian Americans, Hispanic Americans, Black and Brown Americans. We had tremendous unemployment, the lowest it's ever been. In my district, previous to COVID-19, unemployment was 1.86%.
Yes, I understand that, and I take your point. It's just that talking about a pre-COVID era is almost nostalgic. I mean, we really did experience and are still experiencing the after effects of this once in a lifetime pandemic. And the economic knockoff effects are still going to be with us for some time to come. It's going to be a tough climb out
Absolutely, particularly in blue states and blue cities that didn't allow businesses to run or operate or be open. South Carolina today has an unemployment rate of just over 4%. That is remarkable success and achievement in the middle of a pandemic.
Indeed. And let's get to the price tag, which many Republicans dispute for the infrastructure plan. For example, your fellow South Carolinian Senator Tim Scott, who gave the Republican rebuttal to President Biden's address, does not agree with the price tag. It's $2 trillion for the American Jobs Plan, the more, let's say, traditional infrastructure, plus a number of clean energy type of jobs that would help with clean water, you know, removing lead from the pipes, introducing broadband, high-speed internet, and so forth, which President Biden sees as part of infrastructure. And also, as I referred to earlier, this $1.8 billion for what President Biden calls the American Families Plan. And of course, he's suggesting that that be paid for with higher taxes on the country's wealthiest, that is, people who make over $400,000, which is quite a lot of money, and of course, corporations. What's wrong with that?
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. And first, I want to address that infrastructure package, that $2.3 trillion package. I absolutely disagree that human infrastructure is traditional infrastructure, roads and bridges. And in fact, that package, over 93% of it, had zero to do with actual roads and bridges, which is what most Americans believe in. Just last week, I dropped my kids off at school and I sat in traffic for an hour and a half. And that's just in my neighborhood. And it's like that in so many places, not just in my district and my state, but across the country, it is that way. And as I said earlier, I'm a single working mom. The challenges of the last year have been enormous. I would love for my kids to have more fresh vegetables and greener lunches. I compost in my backyard. I have a small, it's not very green right now, my garden in the back. I've not done a good job last couple months, but I garden in my yard. I mean, these are things that are important. I want to make our country greener and better for not just my family, but my family's future and everybody's future. Those are important things. But when we talk about traditional infrastructure, that's what the package should really be about. And when you start putting and piecemealing other issues into what should have been a nonpartisan bill, that's when it becomes very partisan. We need to ensure that when we're appropriating money, we do the correct committee process, and we don't try to redefine roads and bridges as human infrastructure. The American people don't want to be bamboozled, and I think that's essentially what you're trying to do to push something through. The price tag is enormous, and Washington, we don't have a revenue problem per se. It's a spending problem, and it's a problem that's been relegated to both sides of the aisle. Republicans and Democrats have contributed to this problem, and it's only built up over time. And we don't feel it right now. I mean, gas prices have gone up about 55 cents per gallon since the start of the year. We were started at just over $2 a gallon. That doesn't have much of an impact. But I can tell you, by raising taxes on the American people, and I know it sounds good, take money from the rich and give it to the poor, $400,000 a year does sound, it is a lot of money, but the White House wouldn't clarify, was that on individuals or was that on married couples filing jointly? I think there is a big distinction there as well. And when you start taxing the rich, people making $400,000, $800,000, $1 million a year, these are job creators also. We can't forget that. And when we had the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, those people invested in their employees, paid them higher wages, offered better jobs, offered better training. These things are important. If we take that away from our businesses, we're taking away jobs, we're taking away better wages and salaries and better benefits. There's no better time than right now when companies are desperate to get people back to work than to negotiate great work opportunities for every single worker in this country right now. There are jobs, they're available. And I promise you, given the way the market is right now and how desperate companies are to get people back to work, you can negotiate a better opportunity, better salary, better wages, better benefits for you and your family. Now is the best time to do it.
Congresswoman Mace, I want to welcome my colleague Ian Kelly to jump in, particularly with respect to clean energy. With respect to the infrastructure package, President Biden said in his address, he equates addressing the climate crisis with creating great jobs. So with that, Ian, what's your question?
Yes, thanks, Carol. Congresswoman Mace, you represent a coastal district, a district where sea levels are rising, and a district where the environment is a very important issue for many of your voters. So how high of a priority do you believe that climate change should be compared to other issues confronting the U.S., and what policies do you support to help combat climate change?
Climate change is a real problem, particularly in coastal districts. We are seeing sea level rise. In the first 100 days in office, I toured much of the coastline, including a place very near and dear to my heart called Parris Island, the Marine Corps Training Depot. And I saw firsthand the effects of sea level rise over the last 30 years. And it's been tremendous for all of our coastal communities. And then when you add on to that some of the tides and other environmental factors and rain, we have enormous issues with flooding along the coast as well. If it sprinkles, it floods here, really. And so we are working to develop priorities with regards to the environmental impact, whether that's from getting better LIDAR radar mapping. It's a huge issue that I promoted when I was a state lawmaker and came to Congress. Other issues like banning offshore drilling off South Carolina's coast is another issue. But really the biggest issue for my particular district with regards to the environmental impact of climate change is in regards to flooding and figuring out the best way forward, working with our Corps of Engineers, working with our local government and state government to identify where we can have the greatest impact at the local level to improve those factors that are affecting the sea level rise and the flooding that we're having. It's major, and it's all across the district. And in fact, yesterday I had the first of many meetings with every mayor in my congressional district to talk about infrastructure and environmental issues. And it's something that you will see me tackling from a legislative perspective in my own. I'll be sponsoring my own legislation, and I'll be working with Democrats and Republicans alike. That is my hope, to identify ways that we can work together. In fact, I was one of 8 Republicans just a few weeks ago that voted in favor of the Wilderness Act that protected federal lands from drilling. There were only a handful of us, and I was the only Republican to vote against a motion to recommit that bill back to committee. And so it's important, not only do we talk about reaching across the aisle on these issues that are important to our country, but actually do it.
You're listening to Press Conference USA on The Voice of America. Our special guest is Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a first-term Republican from the state of South Carolina. I'm Carol Castiel, and joining me on the program is Current Affairs Assistant Producer Ian Kelly. This is a reminder that our PCUSA podcast is available on our website at voanews.com/PCUSA. You may also follow us on Twitter or connect with us on Facebook at Carol Castiel, VOA. Well, here's a big shout out to a longtime loyal listener and Facebook fan, Mark Versteeg from Australia. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to PCUSA@voanews.com, or better yet, like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. And now we turn back to our special guest, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, a freshman Republican from South Carolina. Congresswoman, let's look at other proposals that are pending in Congress and get your views on those. For example, what about immigration reform? President Biden did present an overhaul of the immigration system on one of his first days in office. It's a very large problem. There are many pieces to it. Do you see any pieces that you would be in agreement with and that you would support, such as perhaps regularizing the status of the so-called Dreamers, those DACA recipients who were brought over as children by their parents to this country through no fault of their own?
Right. The border, immigration, it's more than a problem. We're in a mode where I believe it's a crisis. And we have a vice president who's supposed to be leading us through that effort and has yet to even visit the border to see the crisis at the border. And again, this is something that has developed over time, years, decades, even perhaps. But now it's worse than it's ever been. And it's an issue that Republicans and Democrats have talked about resolving and then never quite get to it. And here we are in this crisis. And there has to be a way. There are folks that come here for many different reasons. Sometimes they're here temporarily. They just need a temporary work visa during seasonal employment. And then they want to go back home to their home countries. We have others that don't want citizenship, but perhaps they want residency so they can come here and work. And then when they're ready to be done, they go back home or they send what they earn back home to their families. And so we also have to recognize there have been people here from all over the world who come here and follow our laws legally and are standing in line waiting patiently to get citizenship. And so we want to make sure that we incentivize legal immigration and whatever that looks like. And I know that there are Republicans and Democrats that are willing to do that, but we have this inability sometimes to recognize that we actually have this problem. And I'm hearing horrific stories about the crisis at the border and how it is trickling into other states that are nowhere near the border. And that could be related to drug trafficking, human trafficking, other enormous issues. And I think the very basic, most simple thing that we could do at a bare minimum is follow the laws in our country until we can formulate a plan to have a better immigration, more efficient, better, tighter controls on our immigration system. We're the most liberal, most free country in the world. There's no other country that allows people to come here the way that we do. We have open doors and we have open and welcoming arms. Most other countries around the world would never do what we're doing right now. And now we have this crisis and we really have to do work on it. And it can't be one-sided. We need to come together and work on it together, like everything else we should be doing.
Indeed. And it sounds like there may be some compromise from what I'm hearing from you. What about other issues, gun safety legislation or police reform? What are your thoughts with respect to other issues which you consider a priority where you think compromise, bipartisanship can actually occur
right,
and we can get some legislation passed?
Well, my message to everyone on every committee that I serve on is I'm really willing to work with anyone who's willing to work with me. When it comes to gun safety, criminal justice reform, these are issues that I worked on as a state lawmaker, as a Republican, and I've come to Congress trying to work on those issues as well. In fact, the first bill I passed out of Congress was with Democrats on a due process criminal justice reform legislation that protected the constitutional rights and due process rights of attorney-client privilege with those in our U.S. prison system. I did that on day 50 while in office. And that is a place where Republicans, number one, we need to recognize that we do have an issue in this country. And then for Democrats, we need to recognize, hey, there are Republicans who want to work with you on this issue. We can't demonize those folks just because we disagree with them. We need to listen to the stories of those. You know, I have a friend who's a young African-American male who annually gets pulled over more times in 1 year than I ever will in my lifetime, and recognize the fear in some of these communities. And rather than defund and abolish law enforcement, perhaps we need to have better training, better qualified candidates, which means more funding, better training, so we don't mistake a gun for a taser. So that we also have better mental health counseling for those that see trauma and violence day in and day out on their jobs. We need to have law enforcement in communities, in neighborhoods, in schools, building relationships with folks who fear someone in uniform, fear being pulled over. That is something that we can work on. I mean, this week we saw Senator Tim Scott give a speech, give a rebuttal. And what happened? He was mocked and vilified, and racist epithets were thrown his way. He's someone who's been a victim of discrimination, but who wants to improve this policy going forward and work together. He's put proposals together in the past. And so on gun safety too, I want to follow the data, follow the science, be effective, but also at the same time, not violate a law-abiding citizen's constitutional rights. And when we look at many of these cases, it's really a matter of information on criminals. And it's not so much about taking away the guns of those that follow the law. It's about ensuring that we have all the information when there is a background check that's done, that we know who's actually trying to get it, and we know their criminal record fully. Even in 2021, this data and information is all over the place. And often law enforcement agencies don't want to share it with other agencies, which is why you see people falling through the cracks. That issue has to be tackled. We've seen in the state of South Carolina, even when the FBI does a background check, they're only allowed to use a fax machine to go and get more information when someone is flagged that perhaps shouldn't be able lawfully or legally be able to buy a gun. I don't own a fax machine. I don't know anybody that does. We need to update and modernize our laws so that we don't take away our constitutional rights and come into, you know, 2021.
Congresswoman Mays, do you see any harm in passing more comprehensive background checks? Not that that would be a panacea for the problem. As you said, there are so many aspects to it that need to be addressed, but I think that's on the table.
Well, I mean, if you're a gun store, you have to, by law, do a background check on anyone purchasing a firearm through your business. So that's already being done. And if you're buying a firearm at a gun show from a firearms dealer, you're going to go through a background check process. You know, one of the other things that comes up, too, is there's a loophole. There should be, you know, a 5, 10, 20, 30 day wait before you buy a firearm. In 2021, with the technology and the software that we have, it shouldn't take 3 days to do a background check. You should know within a few minutes. You should be able to concretely, thoroughly, critically look at someone's criminal record and know the information is out there. We just don't put it in a place that's easily accessible. And it's remarkable that in today's day and age, that if you're the FBI and have to do an extended background check, that you're only able to fax local or state law enforcement to find out more information about someone's criminal record. Why can't you use email or the internet or the phone? It's remarkable when you start diving into the issue and seeing how ineffective we are at the background check. Let's start with streamlining and being much more efficient. If you could do a background check thoroughly in a few minutes, the technology's there. We just don't use it.
I guess many who are proponents of gun safety legislation would agree with you and would like to see the illegal trafficking in guns, you know, be diminished and hopefully stopped. I want to turn back to the police reform. What are your views on the legislation called George Floyd Justice in Policing Act? Did you vote in favor of that in the House of Representatives?
I have to go look at my vote on that. I know that was a recent vote. We take a lot of votes. I have to go back and look at it.
But are you in favor of that? We know you referenced South Carolina Republican Senator Tim Scott, who is earnestly working, trying to work out a compromise with Congresswoman Karen Bass, who co-authored and co-sponsored the bill in the House, and Democratic Senator Cory Booker. Are you hopeful? Do you think there's some possible consensus on that important legislation?
If we can actually work together on that legislation, I would love to see Senator Tim Scott be the lead Republican on criminal justice reform. There are Republicans like myself who have worked on it in the past. I've done it as a state lawmaker. I've done it as a member of Congress. There are those of us that are willing to have this conversation, to work together on it. And I know Congresswoman Bass has acknowledged that she's willing to work with Republicans as well. Time will tell on whether or not we'll be able to do that together. My fear is, you know, we're such a polarized nation right now. You have the radical left and the radical right. They're so far apart. There is a gap and an opportunity for those that are more centered on these issues to work together. Now, are we going to be able to do it? I just don't know. But I've had Democrats reach out to me, and I've reached out to them and worked together with them on small pieces of legislation that can make a big difference. I would love to see that actually happen.
Congresswoman Mace, just a couple more questions before I let you go. I wanted to mention that you criticized the January 6th attack on the Capitol. You dubbed the attack as domestic terrorism. And, you know, you were critical of former President Trump's role in inciting the violence, and you actually called for his censure. I'd like to get your take on the implications of what happened and how concerned you are about the continued spread of disinformation about the so-called big lie that Mr. Trump actually won when in fact he did not, and how this is emboldening some of the domestic extremists like Proud Boys, the so-called Oath Keepers, other assorted white supremacists and anti-government militias. How concerned are you about this trend?
Well, I'm concerned about it on both sides. On the other side, we have Antifa. We have Black Lives Matter protests that are turning violent. So we're seeing this extremism on both sides of the aisle. We've seen members of both parties see that their words have consequences. We've seen the rhetoric ratchet up. I would like to see both sides, quite frankly, just shut up and be peaceful about this and encourage peaceful protests, encourage peaceful demonstrations, encourage people's voices to be heard on all of these issues. I think it's very important. And to acknowledge, you know, we just saw, you know, in Georgia where they're trying to have better voter laws and institute voter ID laws, and the MLB, which took its business, $100 million of business from a Black city in Atlanta and sent it to a white city in Colorado that already had voter ID. It's almost as if we just got to continue warring and having warring factions and continue to divide our country to the point where we're being detrimental to so many communities on both sides of the aisle. And so we need people to be held accountable for their language on both sides. And we need to stop with the crazy rhetoric.
Congresswoman Mace, as we close, I wanted to ask you a question about foreign policy, especially given that you're one of the first women to graduate from the Citadel Military College of South Carolina. You've been involved in integrating women in military institutions. I'd like to get your take on President Biden's decision to withdraw U.S. troops from Afghanistan by September 11th of this year, saying that it's time to come back. Are you in favor of this policy?
I laud President Biden. I am in favor of the troop withdrawal from Afghanistan. We have thousands of American soldiers who've served valiantly over there to basically, you know, protect us from the travesty of 9/11, where over 3,000 Americans were murdered that day. And they've served valiantly. They put their lives on the line for our country. And it's time to come home. We have service members, soldiers, men and women in uniform over there who weren't even born when 9/11 happened. And it's time to acknowledge the success that we've had over there against our foreign enemy and come home. Be stronger as a nation. We will be stronger as a nation if we can do that.
Congresswoman Nancy Mace is a freshman Republican from the state of South Carolina. Congresswoman Mace, thank you so much for taking so much time. Appreciate your insights. Press Conference USA on the Voice of America was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. Thanks to Ian Kelly for booking our guest. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for another Press Conference USA on the Voice of America.